All right, so hi everyone. I'm Ollie Long. I'm a PhD student at Southampton. And I'm going to be talking about time domain metric reconstruction for hyperbolic scattering. And this is work I've done with my supervisor, Lior. So first I'll start with motivation. And we've heard a lot about this today, so I'll keep it brief. First of all, we can do exact post-Minkowskian calculations. So as we heard earlier, first order self-force can get us up to 4 PM calculations. And second order can get us up to 6 PM. Again, as we heard earlier, we can use self-force to compare with quantum-like scatter amplitude calculations. And another thing we can do is use the data for strong field benchmarking, exact at first order in the mass ratio, because as you can see here with periastron against impact parameter, even with relatively low energies, of E equals 1.1, the scatter particle can still penetrate well below the ISCO. So yesterday we heard about the no string gauge, but I'll just go quickly over it again. So in the no string gauge, we have a field that are in two different gauges. We have an inner field, this phi less than, and the outer field phi greater than, with the boundary being on the current location of the particle. And if the particle is moving, then these field, the regions of these fields move with the particles. So it's the instantaneous R which defines the fields. And both of these fields are defined as being vacuum. So for the Hertz potential phi, they both solve the vacuum Tucholsky equation. And once we have a solution for this, we can use this second order operator S dagger to get the vacuum parts of the metric via metric reconstruction. And then once we have those, it's known from Pound et al. That we can get the self-force once we have these metric perturbations. So the way we're gonna do this is in a 1 + 1 dd composition. So we take the Hertz potential and, as been done many times before, split it into a time radial part and an angular part, where the angular part here are just spin weighted spherical harmonics. And one thing about the no string gauge is because you have two different, the fields in two different gauges, there are discontinuities along this boundary here. So it's a sphere of radius R. So the Hertz potential in 1 + 1 d obeys what are known as inversion relations. So we have a radial inversion relation, which relates the Hertz potential to the vial scalar psi naught. And this is a fourth order differential operator in T and R. We also have an angular inversion, which is a first order ODE in time, which relates the Hertz potential to psi 4. And note, and these are both only valid in vacuum, which is why we have the greater than or less than labels on it. Now, when we have these, we can manipulate these together and use the Tucholsky equation to get a first order ODE in time for the jumps across this boundary. And the jumps are defined as the difference between the two as we go over the boundary. And you'll notice here that the source depends on the vial scalars and certain derivatives, the jumps in them, sorry. But these jumps we can obtain directly from the source, the Tucholsky equation. So what do we actually want to evolve? Well, this is the form of the 1 + 1 d Tucholsky equation. So we have a principal mixed derivative in Eddington Finkelstein null coordinates. And then we have single derivative and no derivative terms, each with an associated potential. So the way we evolve it is we use a null UV grid. So we have the particle's world line going through the grid, and here I've shown a scatter world line. We have a fixed grid of fixed size H. So what we do is, say if you wanted to calculate this point here, you use points that are previous in the light cone of the point you want to calculate and use a finite difference version of the Tucholsky equation to calculate that point. Now for this, we need initial conditions, which will be put on the first rows of constant U and V. Now we let the evolution be seeded by the jumps that are across the world line. So we set all of these to zero, but this produces non-physical radiation at the beginning of the evolution, so we just discard the early time as it radiates away. Now, when we integrate over the whole domain, on the right hand side of the world line, we integrate and calculate phi greater than, on the left side we do for phi less than. But this produces a problem because we have some particles where the world line goes through the cell. So these need to be taken into account carefully, as on the right hand side, you're integrating for a different field than on the left hand side. And it's these cells where the jumps come in and that seed the evolution. So what happens when we actually try this? Well, we find we have a problem of divergent modes. So for plus two, we have an exponentially growing mode. And for s equals minus two, we have a t to the four mode. Now, if we do an asymptotic expansion of the Tucholsky equation, you find there are non-physical asymptotic solutions corresponding to waves coming out of the horizon and waves coming in from null infinity. You can see that when s equals plus two, you get an exponentially growing mode, and when s equals minus two, you get a mode that grows as t to the four, which is exactly what we see. Now, these non-physical terms are usually removed by physical boundary conditions, but as we're using a null setup, we don't actually impose boundary conditions, which is where the problem arises. Now, both of these terms originate from the phi comma t term in the Tucholsky equation, which we will make use of later. So how can we get rid of these divergent modes? Well, it's impractical to use high precision arithmetic because the modes grow so quickly, and we also want to do long evolutions. So we have to look for another method. One is to use compactification to under-resolve the problem modes. So this is essentially changing the coordinates so that Scry Plus and the future horizon are at finite coordinates. So if we look at the grid I showed before again, you have these unphysical modes coming in from the horizon and in from null infinity. So for compactification, you essentially get rid of some of these grid lines. So you see here, coming from null infinity, if we compactify in V, you see there are less sample points, so the mode will be under-resolved. And similarly, inside the world line, you have the same if you compactify with U. Another way to do it would be to change the field variable to remove the problematic phi comma t term, and this is what we're going to explore now. So the Reggie Wheeler equation has this form, so you can see it has none of the single derivatives that Tucholsky had, and those are the terms that contain the phi comma t term. So once we have a solution to the Reggie Wheeler equation, we can get back to the Tucholsky equation, to both the spin plus and spin minus solutions using Chandrasekhar transformations. And these are just V and U derivatives of the Reggie Wheeler field. So when we do this, you can see here that for plus two, we have no exponential mode, and for minus two, we have no t to the four mode. So this seems to work at least for vacuum. But what about when we have a particle? Well, for the particle, we need jumps again, so we can manipulate the Chandrasekhar transformations and use the Reggie Wheeler equation. And again, we get a first order ODE in time for the jumps. But notice here that the source depends on the jumps in the Hertz potential. So now we have a hierarchical set of ODEs to get the jumps in the Reggie Wheeler variable. So this has a homogeneous solution, which looks like this. And the main important thing to note is that it decays exponentially with time, which means when we numerically integrate, we want to integrate forward in time so that we don't pick up this homogeneous solution. And when we do that, we get results that are like this. You can see there's definite peaks around periastron, which is at t equals zero. And here I've shown the 2-0 mode and the 2-2 mode. So this is the hyperbolic orbit that the previous results and the next results are gonna look at. And we chose this one because, as you can see, it goes quite far into the strong field regime below the ISCO and also has a decent scattering angle. So here are a selection of the Reggie Wheeler field results. You can see on the left, we have the junk radiation from the unphysical initial conditions, as I explained earlier, and it radiates away as expected. There are then peaks in all of the modes around periastron, except in the 2-2 mode, you can see the peak is actually after periastron. And we're going to look at this a bit closer now. So first, we're going to look at what actually happens in the code. So we can't put the particle actually at infinity, so we have to put it at a finite radii. You can see here when we move from 100m to 200m, the relative difference between the two is very small. So this is essentially independent of where we start the particle. So now if we look at the Hertz potential of the 2-2 mode, you can see again we have the post-periastron peak, though it's not as prominent as it was before. And also we have, you can see here, what wiggles when we, which are more prominent when we multiply by r squared. Now, we think these are quasi-normal modes because they have been seen in the bound case for highly eccentric orbits. So it makes sense that when you extend it to the non-bound case, that if we see similar features, that's the explanation for it. Similarly, at null infinity, we see a post-periastron peak and the quasi-normal modes. So to summarize, the 1 plus 1d Tucholsky equation is numerically unstable without boundary conditions, but we have gotten around this by using a Reggie-Wheeler variable instead and then transforming back. And we have a code that can calculate the node string Hertz potential for scattered geodesics with roughly a periastron below about 50m and an initial velocity of the particle below about 0.6. So for future, we intend to use this to calculate the first order cell force correction to the scatter angle. And I spoke about this last year, so I'll just be brief. So we have these known functions that depend on the geodesic of the scatter particle and then integrals of the cell force over the entire orbit. And then looking further ahead to move to Kerr, we intend to explore the compactification in null coordinates as we can't use the same Reggie-Wheeler transform that we did for this Schwarzschild case. Thank you. Are there any questions?
All right. Thank you, Oliver. Thank you for being spot on time. Do we have any questions from the audience? Yes, we have one from Beatrix. Asked you to unmute.
Great, yes. Thank you. Very nice talk, Ollie. Thanks for presenting this. I was curious, is it only the 2-2 mode that shows the quasi-normal modes, or did the other have it too, and you just are not resolving it?
You can see them in some of the other modes, but they're less prominent, which is why I've only shown these.
Yeah, no, fair. Okay, great, thanks.